Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of We Didn't Know How Good We Have It. This week, I'm chatting to my good friend, Ben Forrester.
Hello, sir.
How are you?
Good, man. Yeah, very good. Very happy to be chatting to you. How are you doing, dude?
I am very good, man. It's a pleasure to have you. Thank you for taking the time, obviously. I know, again, I'll say this every week, but all we have is time right now, but it's still a precious commodity, really.
Sure is, dude.
Yeah, what have you been up to? You been up to much?
Not an awful lot, my man. Just working and just kind of trying to just kind of keep everything chugging along, man. You know, that's all you can do right now. Yeah, nothing really super exciting. I had a really productive year last year, so I'm just sort of weirdly. But yeah, just figuring stuff out and figuring what to do next, and just trying to keep creative and trying to keep things moving forward. And, you know, I try to see myself as a jack of all trades. So, you know, just do a little bit of writing here and there and a little bit of presenting. And
I'll get you on Blue Peter soon.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I'd love to be on Blue Peter. And someone told me once that I'd make a really good, like, children's TV presenter, which I was really stoked on.
I was going to say, it's quite a compliment, that is. Yeah. You were one of those rather brave musicians that released a record last year, aren't you?
Yeah, certainly was, man. Yeah.
Well, I've got a copy of it. I've got a copy of it sitting over there, actually.
Ah, you're a hero. Thank you, dude.
I say, for anyone's aware, Ben goes under the moniker of Peaks. Yeah. And it's absolutely lovely. Obviously, correct me if I'm wrong, with sort of lo-fi pop that just warms your heart. Like,
Yeah, that sounds rocket. That sounds accurate. It's like this record is meant to be a kind of a yin and yang. It's got like some really lovely, nice, candid moments, and then it's got a few more kind of sadder, darker moments on it. But yeah, the plan is for it to be, you know, very personal and direct. So yeah, if it warms your heart, Rich, then that is lovely to hear.
But you released it through Didas Dare, didn't you, the guys up in Birmingham? How did that sort of come about?
Yeah, I did. I mean, I've known Paul for a little while, actually. Paul obviously used to play in a band. I used to play in a band called Bad Grammar, and then he obviously is in a band called Faux Chisels. We used to play quite a lot in like Telford and in Birmingham, and then yeah, we just kind of always just sort of stuck in touch like online and things. And then I actually, hilariously, about a year ago, a couple of years ago, 2019 it would have been, I said I wanted to release something and would he be interested? And he said, yeah, that'd be cool. Like, please send whatever you've got. And I hadn't really sort of figured out what I was doing. And I said, oh, I really want to make like a really like downer acoustic emo record. And he was like, all right, cool. Anyway, I did it. And then I sent it him literally about a week before we got locked down last March. Mm. And literally the day I was traveling home and from work in Manchester at the time. And I sent him the masters. I got the masters back that day. And he was like, yeah, that's great. I'd love to put it out. We did everything, like did all the artwork, did the inlay, got it sent off to be pressed on cassette. And then by like literally 3 days after I'd asked him if he wanted to put it out, the pre-orders were already up online. And then literally 4 or 5 days after that, the pandemic the pandemic struck. And and it was just sort of like, this is really weird timing, but it actually turned out to be a really wonderful, lovely communal thing because people were at home absorbing more. And as a really, really DIY independent artist, I suddenly felt like a lot more visible. You know, people were actually engaging with like social media. People were listening to the songs that I was putting out. And it's like the most successful release I've ever had.
And you did some fantastic live streams as well, didn't you, over Instagram? I've tuned into a few of those that you've done for the past 12 months or so.
Thanks, man. I did the album release thing, and then I did another one sort of last year. And I did like a couple of little sort of talky ones where I just sort of did track by tracks. I didn't want to sort of oversaturate it with just me sat in the room playing acoustic songs because that's all that's on Instagram now. But considering that's actually what I do, I thought, well, I'm sure people aren't going to kind of like be annoyed at me for sat in my bedroom playing the acoustic songs.
Yeah, I'm not going to tune into an acoustic performer going, why is he playing an acoustic guitar in his bedroom?
I'm sick of these acoustic singer-songwriters. Yeah.
You had plenty of cans of beer, and I think we were happy sitting drinking and enjoying it with you. It's like being at a gig.
Yeah, I think that was it. I wanted it to be, and that was the beauty of doing it like live as well, and through like Instagram Live is really nice because, you know, I got that interaction, and you know, like we're talking,
smashing the heart button,
talking about like what we had for tea and stuff, and it was just like, and it's just really lovely. Like Peaks is kind of, you know, my following is generally speaking just all my really lovely mates, so it's just kind of really nice to just, you know, to do it and just hang out with your mates and for them to kind of just be so nice and receptive of your art, your music.
So you do feel lovely, man. Weirdly connected doing an Instagram. I know there's loads of ways to sort of get out there for people to watch you now, but I've done a couple of Instagram interviews with people and you do feel a lot more connected when you see people's comments scrolling up and, you know, actual interaction and being able to interact with them live, if that makes sense. So like,
yeah, totally. That's why I wanted to do it, because I wanted to do like some track by track stuff, and I thought like, oh man, like it would be good to talk about stuff, but like I don't want to talk at people, and I can talk for England, so I just thought like I don't want to. So I thought if I do it live, then if anyone has any questions, anyone wants to talk to me, then fantastic. And people were putting silly things up and talking about, you know, stuff that was in the news or like stupid stories that related to what I was saying. And that's what I wanted, you know.
Yeah.
If it was just me talking at you for an hour, it'd be boring. So, you know, I wanted people to interact, and I kind of tried to encourage that. And, you know, obviously, like if you can encourage and build that rapport, then people feel comfortable and they get on board, and then, yeah. And then the good times can assume, they can roll.
I was chatting the other day for another one of these episodes, and we were discussing how it feels like, I know I said earlier, I wasn't going to mention last year, the pandemic, I think, because we've all had enough of hearing about it. But a lot of people were talking about how things feel like they've stopped when it comes to live music and everything like that. But personally, as a live music promoter and listening to so many records from people, I feel like it's just been put on pause because people haven't, and by people, I mean music fans, people who consume anything from the arts, they haven't forgotten at all. It's literally someone's just pressed the pause button. The moment that we can open everything back up again, get back into music venues, go into theatres, go to cinemas, it's just going to be like day one again. Like everyone's going to want to go and consume all that again. And I for one, can't wait for that day. But
I completely agree.
I'm glad that there's now these things that we may have taken for granted 5-6 years ago, to these things that we can use to stay in touch with each other and stay in contact with fans, you know, not just having a mailing list that you have to scribble your illegible handwriting down at a gig and then hope that you can get an email from a band every month or so. Like, it's almost instant now, and that can be quite daunting, I guess, but at the same time, it's quite a lovely thing when you think about it.
It is. I think it's going to definitely change the shape of the way that people promote things now. But I think that's cool. You know, we live in a digital age. We are like always on our phones and always staring at a screen. So why not kind of like buy into that and
if you move embrace into it, that? Like obviously it's got its darker sides, but if you embrace it and really look for the positive in everything, it's definitely a well worth tool to use.
That's exactly it. You've got to look at the like what it's good for, you know, instead of the dark dregs of the social media world that is not a nice place to be in. But there's a lot of really amazing, wonderful, lovely stuff happening that is making people feel better. So embrace it.
Music being one of them. Live music over Instagram being one of them.
Yeah, totally, man. I mean, but then like watching like live sessions and things like that, like live streams and things is like really nice. It's weird, but it just, if anything, it just makes me ready to go back and do it. It doesn't make you think like, oh, I'm gonna be weird and stood in a venue. I'm thinking, I can't wait to spill my pint over someone.
And have one spilt back over you in return, and you don't know from a different city. Like, you alluded to obviously the days in Bad Grammar. I'm a huge fan, as you already know, and like
you, sweetheart.
Oh, I've gotta keep everybody sweet, really. if you wouldn't mind, like, give us sort of a bit of a background to that, so you don't have to go too far into it, because we will eventually get onto the reason you're here, which is to talk about you know, how we didn't know how good we had it. Just give us a little bit of a background on Bad Grammar and how maybe some of these acts that you're going to talk to, obviously don't spoil them just yet, but may have influenced you or given you that incentive to pick up the guitar and write some, you know, proper shouty riffs and get it out there for people and do what these bands are doing. So where did it all sort of start there?
Well, it's funny, like, I mean, Bad Grammar, for those that don't know, was a band that was me and my good friend Lucy. And I know Lucy for years, actually, but we didn't know each other super well. We're both from Shropshire in the West Midlands. And we used to play in bands, like little, like indie bands, like when we were kids. In fact, she was in a band with her brother and Graham, who's in Wax Futures. And I was in a band with my little sister, Daisy. And so we kind of bonded over being in like sibling bands. And years later, she was in Manchester. I'd moved to Manchester. We bumped into each other at a gig. And she was just so on it and so into like the scene and into what was going on in Manchester. I was like, I need to hang out with this person because they seem my kind of person. And you know, she said, are you still playing guitar? I said, yes. I said, are you still playing drums? She said, yes. And we spent about a year just sort of like messing around. And then, yeah, then we just started talking about all the bands that we, because she was quite into the scene, like the Midlands scene that we're going to kind of talk a little bit about. Mm-hmm. And we just sort of talked about like the energy and the passion of those bands and how there was a humbleness about them and how they just sort of just went out and got it. You know, they didn't wait for anybody. They just gave it absolutely 110%. And it didn't matter if their string snapped or their stick snapped or whether, you know, it sounded out of tune or whether it was too loud or too quiet. It was just about being as ferocious a live band as you could. And we loved that. We loved just watching bands where you were just so absorbed in their energy that it made you want to get into it. And that's where the kind of, I guess, the catalyst for Bad Grammar began, where we thought we want to write noisy rock songs, you know, but with hooks, you know, that they're poppy and we love pop music. So that's kind of where we went. And then we kind of ended up morphing into that sort of like riff rock scene that was sort of like very sort of relevant at that time. But at the same time, we'd grown up listening to bands like Blood Red Shoes and Death From Above 1979 that were doing that stuff years ago. So
it's
we were just kind
not
of
to absorb that from them, that sort of energy and that idea
yeah.
from them.
So we were just kind of going back to our roots and whilst kind of embracing some of the stuff that other people were doing as well and putting our own spin on it. And and it led to a really kind of mad few years. We weren't a band for a massive amount of time, but the amount of time that we were a band, we achieved a hell of a lot, and I'm really proud of what we
managed
to do.
Andrew WK's favourite band.
I forgot about that. Yeah. Oh my god. Yeah. Yeah. He apparently he chose us, but I don't to play a festival.
There was some air commas there for people who don't
see this stuff. But I like. Yeah. Do you know what? Fuck it. Yeah. Andrew WK loves our band.
That's good. Yes. But yeah. Obviously. The reason I've brought you on here is to sort of talk about the bands that influence you as a person. Obviously, we've got sort of a bit of an insight there into influence your music with Bad Grammar and obviously with Peaks, I guess some of this sort of flutters into it as well. Let's get started then at the top of this list. Now, these aren't in any, I said they're not first place, second place, third place by any stretch. No. And we'll probably talk way too long about a couple of these bands, but... Who would you like to start with then? Which band shall we discuss that, you know, you're glad that they were there, but we want them back. You got to experience records and shows and things. Who should we start with?
I want to start with Johnny Foreigner, because I was thinking about this when you sent it to me, and I was thinking about the bands that really influenced me and really made a massive difference in my life growing up, wanting to be a musician. And I've spent like... since you messaged me a few days ago, I've spent like every day listening to their back catalogue, and I've not listened to it in ages. And I've just like, I was telling you the other day, I almost got quite emotional thinking about it, because they were just such a huge stepping stone into that world, that alternative, like twiddly punky rock world that yeah. I just absolutely like love and was my catalyst for being in bands.
Yeah. I feel like I said this in another episode that you can't go to, or you couldn't go to a show in the West Midlands without seeing someone with a Johnny Foreigner t-shirt on or at least talking about them. Like yeah. they were that like cult, but bigger than cult, if you know what I mean.
Kind of, but it was, I think they to me, kind of definitely promoted a sense of community. And like, I'd go to the Flapper, like I was saying to you earlier, actually, like, me and my friend would go, one of us would be wearing a Los Campesinos t-shirt and the other would be wearing a Johnny Foreigner t-shirt, usually, like, we'd swap, because yeah, those were our two favourite bands at the time. And we'd go and sit on the picnic benches out in the Flapper, and within half an hour, the picnic table would be full of people wearing Los Campesinos and or Johnny Foreigner t-shirts. In fact, I'm pretty sure one of my friends met his now partner at a Johnny Foreigner show. You know, it was just sort of so encompassing, like this wonderful, like, little group of people that really were really welcoming and really lovely. And I'd never had that in my life before. I was, what, like 18, 19, I just started going to uni, and, you know, I'd always been quite on my own with my music taste. I had people that liked what I liked, but I was such a nerd and spent so much time listening to stuff and, like, seeking stuff online that I never really, no one could really sort of not catch up with me, but, you know, everyone was just doing their own thing, and that was cool. I didn't want to thrust, like, my, you know, my tastes on anyone. And then I met a couple of people at uni, and then we started going to shows together, and then I met all these, like, my, and then I realized that there's a whole network of nerds that like stuff like that I do, and that's only grown now. And, you know, I mean, that's how you and me met, through nerding out about stuff, you know. And that's what Johnny Foreigner started for us, really. And that whole, because I went to university in Warrington, but I used to come back home in Shropshire in the West Midlands, and our nearest cities were Wolverhampton or Birmingham. So we used to go to Birmingham all the time. Me and my little sister used to take the trip, particularly in the summer, to go and watch shows. And I remember when I came back from university one year, in fact, I'd finished, and I didn't know what I was doing with my life. You know, that kind of horrible post-uni dread, oh, where God, your post-grad, yeah, the life.
Black hole of what am I doing now?
It's frightening, isn't it? And I thought, I don't know what to do here. But it was fine, because I still could go to Birmingham and watch my favourite band play to 20 people, and we'd all go apeshit and drink beer. And I'd go home on the train, and I'd just be like, again, I'd be emotional about it, because it was just so nice to have that connection with people. You know, I don't know Johnny Foreigner personally. I think I met Alexi years later at a Bad Grammar show, weirdly. I just remember just saying to him, like, you know, that band were a big, big deal to a lot of people. I don't think they'll ever know it, but they helped a lot of people through feeling a bit like, I don't know, a bit lonely, I guess. And, so that's
something we mentioned just before we started recording this, wasn't it? How we've had conversations with people, and a lot of people who are on this list that you mentioned, and obviously a lot of bands that I'm going to be talking to over the next few weeks and over the last few weeks, that they don't, that some of them don't realise how important they were to people, not necessarily just musically, but that whole community side to it, where you go to a gig, you sit on your own outside, and then all of a sudden you're surrounded by people who love the same thing that you do. And it's almost like the band know what they are. They write fantastic music. This isn't just for Johnny Foreigner. In bands in general, they can write fantastic music. They can have a great look. They can have a great image. But the most important thing is they bring people together.
And that's it, man.
It's nice. It's nice when bands do realize that, because they can embrace that then, because they get it. But if they don't realize it, it's almost like it feels weird to tell them that. Like, you mean a hell of a lot to a lot of people.
Yeah,
and it's
exactly.
Almost like, I remember you told me a story earlier on that, obviously we won't go into it, but it's nice that I don't think when they do get that moment, they click and they go, oh, actually, we were or we are important to a hell of a lot of people.
Exactly, but it's also nice to be humbled and to have bands. Like, we used to go, me and Daisy, my little sister, we went to go and see, like, Shapes years ago at the Flapper, who, for those who don't know, just like a proper raucous math rock band.
Fantastic.
And, you know, looking at them, they were all really handsome, but they were also like fucking brutal live, weren't they? Did you ever see them?
I didn't get a chance to see them, though. And now you've made me sad.
Oh, sorry, dude. They were like a ridiculously brutal band. Live, just like tight as hell, but also like totally like just punk and chaotic as well. And, you know, I thought, man, these guys are like next level. They're up here. And then afterwards, like, I'd bump into Steve, their guitarist, and he'd just talk to me about like his day at work and like what he'd been up to and stuff. And
And you're like, dude, did you just see what you just did?
Yeah, exactly. And I'm like, I'd be like, man, like, you have no idea, do you, how good you are? And like, and we'd go to shows, like, they'd come to Manchester quite a bit when I lived, when I started living up there. And then, like, he'd, like, come over and shake my hand, and I'd be like, this guy is just, like, is in, just in such an exciting, amazing band that people need to know about. And he's just acting just so chill and aloof about it, and it just lost my mind. But it gave me a lesson into not put people on a pedestal and realize that everyone is just doing their own thing and how they want it to do. And I love that the scene that we're engulfed in and we love is full of people that just like what they do. They're not in it to make shitloads of money. Of course they want people to buy the merch and listen to the records and get into the live show, but they're not after worship. They're just after they just want to get it out there and have a good time with it, you know? And that really taught me like a very like important lesson in being humble, you know, not don't be a dick, basically.
Don't be a dick.
Just because you're a rock star, not a rock star, just because you're in a rock band, you know, doesn't mean you have to. And I've met so many dickheads in bands that aren't important and bands that don't do anything to anyone and people that think that they are on a pedestal because they're in a band. You're not at all, you know, like people are there. You're there because someone put you there, you know, yeah. Someone paid to get to your show and love your record and bought your t-shirt to be fucking nice. Do you know what I mean?
Well, on that note, shall we talk about, let's talk about Johnny Foreigner again.
Sorry, I got a bit angry then.
It was passionate. I liked it. Yeah, so obviously the idea is I've asked you to pick your favourite show, yeah. Your favourite song, and your favourite release. Obviously, we've spoken about basically every Johnny Foreigner show is your favourite show because it pulls that community with it,
yeah,
wherever it goes, really. Mm-hmm. But let's chat about the song that you've picked, because this is my favourite Johnny Foreigner song as well. So I'm glad that you've. You picked it as well, but yeah, do you want to go into it?
Well, to be honest, this one, Salt, Pepper and Spinderella, it's like the Jofo tune because yeah. It's just so unbelievably well written. It's so exciting. It has this beautiful build to it. It's really catchy. And then like there's the spoken word bit. And then like Alexis says, turn on the real drums. And then this Casio keyboard beat that's running throughout the song stops. And then they all just freak out. And it's just like this killer, like twiddly punk, like chaos. And it's just, and watching that live was just like, oh my God.
It
was
yeah,
like
you sort most... of know what's coming, don't you? You can sense yeah, you it. Do. Like you've got the same... And I'm pretty sure, I'll ask Junior this, but I'm pretty sure it's the same Casio keyboard that they use with the same beat. It's not just a sample. I'm pretty sure he just presses play and it goes from there. And when you hear it, you're like, here we go. Like,
yeah.
This is 2008. This is ready to drop on me. And I can't wait for like 2.5 minutes into this song. Everyone sort of stood still, embracing it. And then you've got that last minute and a half of, like you said, it just kicks off from there. But it's absolutely fantastic. I think I remember seeing the music video to that on MTV2 or something like that back in the day. Yeah. Like, that's Birmingham. So they considered this, like, film on top of a car park and stuff. I'm like, oh, there's a band from Birmingham? Like, what's this? This is new? Like,
yeah, totally, man.
I think my first, like, proper experience of Johnny Foreigner was at Reading Festival in 2007, I'm going to say. Wow. 2007 or 2008, and on the Festival Republic stage, and my friend handed me a Johnny Foreigner CD at school. I say at school, sixth form, trying to make yourself sound much younger than I am there. and he said, go check out this band, they're playing at like 4 o'clock on this stage. I was like, yeah, cool. I got to watch them, and I didn't realise there were thousands of people there.
Yeah,
and I think that it clicked, something clicked in my head then. I'm like, oh, music's a thing. Like, this is fantastic. Like, I didn't realize that a band from where I'm from could do this. They're not Kings of Leon. They're not, you know, these big American bands that are coming over here. They're from where I'm from. And it was amazing. Like, almost like a proper magical moment there.
Yeah, it's exciting. Yeah, man, that's a really nice moment. It's exciting, isn't it, when like bands from where you're from actually, you know, can transcend like audiences and you know, fill out rooms and stuff. You just... It gives you hope, doesn't it? You think, yeah, man, this is really exciting.
I could be a rock star.
I could do this. Yeah, exactly. But I mean, I could have picked any of their songs, to be honest. Yeah. Like there's quite a lot that I have, like, probably like a, one day I'll make a playlist, but I have quite a definitive list of JoFo songs that I absolutely love. But this one, it just feels like, you know, their strongest moment as songwriters. And it is just that, like, pure sugar rush of a moment when it all kicks off at the end, and
it just clicks, doesn't it? That track just clicks to a lot of people. If we'll just move on to what you put your favorite release here. Do you want to go into that for me quickly?
Oh yeah, Grace in the Bigger Picture, second album.
Yeah.
I loved everything they've done. I've loved all their records. I was listening to their more recent stuff actually the other day. I hadn't heard it in a little while, and that's still great. They got like a second guitarist in, and it sounded really cool. But Grace in the Bigger Picture just kind of felt like a more sort of it was a more kind of, the first album's quite polished, like sonically. This was a bit more of a punky record, but it still had that sense of ambition. It was still moving forward. The songs were snappier, but then there was also some more kind of interesting dynamics in there. And it just reminds me of like uni and just blasting it out in my dorm room and just
making the neighbors listen to it.
Yeah. And just smashing cans of Strongbow and nice. having a lovely time, you know. Yeah, so Grace in the Bigger Picture, that reminds me of fun times for sure.
So the same as I'm pretty sure everyone that I'm going to have on this podcast, we could talk about John and Foreigner all day because they mean a lot to me as well, and I'm not going to go into it because I probably have done for episodes that I've done in the past. But moving on, there's another band, unfortunately, that I could talk about all day with you.
That's true, yeah.
Who have we got in your second choice?
We have Blackfish, who are another Birmingham-based band.
It just seems like Birmingham has all the best bands, doesn't it, really?
I mean, they do, really. I mean, like, if you think of all the other bands that, like, because there's another band I was going to talk about was, like, Calories. They're another Birmingham band that I just absolutely, like, when
Pete,
I first saw
Pete
them
Pete Dixon's band, I think, Pete from Sunshine Frisbee Laserbeam.
Yeah, that was his.
He was in Calories, wasn't he? Yeah.
He was the guitarist. He was the bassist and singer of Calories, and now he's in Sunshine. He's a very talented songwriter, but they were a really important band as well. But yeah, I chose Blackfish because they were unlike anything I'd heard at the time. I went to go and watch Tellison and Tube Lord at the Academy 3 in Birmingham, and I was back home with my little sister, excuse me, who was very clued up, and she'd spent most of her time on MySpace finding these bands, and she introduced me to a lot of stuff actually, which I was kind of a bit like slightly jaded about, because I introduced her to loads of really cool bands. And then like a year later, I come back for uni and she'd just present me with all this stuff and it was all gold. It was all like unbelievable. And I'm like, God damn it, you're so much cooler than I am. She is cooler than I am. I'll admit that happily. But we went to the show and then Sam Manville walks in from Blackfish looking like very simplistic dress. But I just remember him looking cool. And she went, that guy's in a really cool band. I listened to them there. They're called Blackfish. You should check them out. It's really cool. It's like, you know, Tube Lord have got loads of stuff going on. I was like, yeah, they're like, it's like that, but it's like well angry and it's like dead hardcore and stuff. And it's like really cool. And I was like, cool, man. I like Gallows. I listen to hardcore. And then I went home and listened to it. And I was like, this is unlike anything else I've ever heard. I heard Jeremy Carles and Mark Mann. That was the first song I heard. And I just thought, this is incredible. The songwriting's amazing. And then I went to go and watch them live in Birmingham a few months later with Tube Lord again there was no one there. There was like, we were talking earlier about how like these bands would just play to no one, and like these days, like I think they would like really sell out rooms, like not massive rooms, but I think they do pretty well. And I just remember, but Blackfish put 110%, which is why I kind of that energy like really got me into thinking, when I perform, when I play, I want to put as much in as they're putting in, particularly Sam, because he was off the stage, he was running around, he was jumping on things, jumping on people, you know, and it was exciting, you know. It was like visceral, pure punk rock energy. And it was just like, this is what I want to do. I want to be in a band that excites people, and there's an air of unpredictability, but it's not like dangerous. You're not like, this guy's going to smack me in the head. You're not in
real danger or anything like that. It's almost like controlled chaos. Like,
yeah, exactly.
It's not choreographed, but it could be kind of choreographed. Like, you know,
yeah, kind of, but this guy's just going to come out and just jump around and like mess around, and it's going to be good fun. It's not, you're not going to feel uncomfortable by him. You're going to feel excited by him, and it's going to propel you to rock out with him and have like rock. I can't believe I said rock out.
It's fine. That's the, I'm going to use that as the little jingle now. Prepare to rock out, guys. Ben Forrester.
That's my mantra, man. Ben Forrester, prepare to rock out. Yeah, but, and it makes you want to join in and just go nuts. And that was why I chose that band, because they were a gateway also to a lot more heavier stuff as well. Like, and weird techie stuff as well. There was a lot going on in the songs. You know, there's a million ideas in the songs, but they're all good ideas. You know, bands like Shapes and Brontide and who else was I going to say? Meet Me in St. Louis. You know, they completely, utterly blew my mind when I first heard them. And they toured with Blackfish years ago, and I never saw Meet Me in St. Louis the first time. I saw them when they reformed a few years ago.
I think we were there together for that, weren't we?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, they did. And then I think it was the Yokai. And then I saw them at Brudenell as well, like on their comeback tour. Because I just had to go because they were such an important band, again, getting into that whole kind of techie Matthew rock scene. And they toured with Blackfish. And I just had no idea, just had no clue. And then, like, and then when all these bands disbanded, it was just, you know, really gutting. And obviously it paved the way for new bands and a new scene was born, and it was wonderful. But there was just such an air of like unpredictability about that scene in a great way. You know, everyone was just kind of doing it because they loved it, you know.
Well, there's a lot. I mean, the main reason behind why I started this podcast is because I started a playlist a few years back on Spotify that I shared with if anyone's familiar, the UK Math and Post Rock group on Facebook. And I made it a collaborative thing and just asked people to put bands in that aren't together anymore. And bands that we wish were still together and we enjoy their music and you just listen to it on a daily. And so many of those bands have that. You were saying one track has like 1,000 ideas in it. There were so many bands at that time, sort of 2006, 2010, anywhere sort of in between now, 2012, that had the same sort of thing, but they were all different. Like you can have a bunch of, I hate the phrase, but landfill indie bands. As much as we all love them and we all happily go to Propaganda and enjoy our, you know, our teens and stuff listening back to it. Four chord, happy indie stuff, cool. These bands from the same time, they were all different. They all worked so well. Like you're saying, Brontide, Blackfish, Tube Lord. It's amazing how many of them there actually were. Like you could go down a rabbit hole and get lost.
Dan and Anna and Aykroyd were another band like that just sort of, you know, you think, what the fuck is this? They've got two drummers. And you don't know what
the sound engineer's worst nightmare.
I know. You don't know what they're going to do, but I'm all for it. I'm absolutely exhilarated by this. it was super, super exciting, that whole scene for sure.
We'll just quickly touch upon your sort of favourite Blackfish release. You put See You in Another City, which is their EP.
Yeah, it had to be this.
Go on then. Delve deep for me.
It's my favourite EP of all time. It's the best EP that's ever been written.
Oh, wow.
Full stop.
Well, there's the voiceover for the beginning.
It's just perfect, mate. It's absolutely perfect. It's catchy. It's heavy. It's mind-boggling. It's just got so much going on, but it's really well written, really well produced. I love Champions. It's an incredible album, but I just felt See You in Another City just encapsulated just a short burst of just utter fire, you know, like
leave you wanting more in like the best possible way. It's like, where is this going? Where can this go?
Exactly. And that's what it was. And all those five songs on it are just like, like probably my five favorite songs by that band. So I remember hearing it for the first time and it completely blew my fucking head off. And and it still does. I listened to it a few months ago and I laughed my head off all the way through because it's just so, so good.
Amazing. And you put here your favourite shows, the Champions album release show down at Concord in Brighton.
Yeah, that was a total accident, actually. we went on holiday, me and my little sister with my mum and dad, and found out that Blackfish were playing. The support was this is crazy. And I tell my friends, Matt and Andy, this all the time. And they always like shake their head in jealous rage, which I'm very chuffed about. It was Brontide and Shapes were on tour. So they ended up opening up, and then it was Mutiny and the Bounty and Blackfish. And that was the bill. And I was just remember thinking like, this is gold. And again, there was like no one there. It was the day Champions came out. There was loads of people there. It was a full room, but it was a small venue. You know, it was kind of upstairs in the Concord, like a tiny little venue. It might not have even been the Concord. I think it was. It was a small little room upstairs anyway.
I'll get my little elves to figure out which venue it was. Correct.
It was just amazing. But because like, it was the release show and there was a four band build, there was quite a lot of people there. Mm-hmm. So it was just so lovely to just see just a whole room of people just loving it and just going nuts. And there was loads of balloons flying around. And it was a real moment. And I don't know if they played all of Champions in full, but yeah, it was. And I'd, you know, obviously that album had only just come out, but yeah, I remember thinking, oh, this album is you know, incredible on record, but live it is just absolutely wild.
Different beast,
yeah. It is, yeah, for sure, man.
I feel like I could quite happily talk about Blackfish all evening. but we'll leave it at that. We'll leave it for everyone's sort of imagination to go from there. No doubt anyone else I'm going to be speaking to, someone will bring them back up again and we'll have to have a reminisce about them. But yeah, Blackfish are if I was to be choosing my list, they'd be top of my list, to be completely honest with you. And just out of sheer selfishness. For the one that just wants to get them back. But yeah, moving on then. So we'll move on to the next band you've got here. Now, I'm going to need your help with this. And I'm throwing out there, guys, I'm really ignorant to this band. And I listened to them for the first time today. So Ben's going to help me out with this. Who have you chosen?
They're called Youth Movies. They were from Oxford. And they were originally called Youth Movie Soundtrack Strategies. And they had a really... like very long pretentious EP title, and I remember, you know, I was sort of mid-teens, I thought this is cool. I heard a song called Spooks the Horse and it's like 8 minutes long and it's loads going on and it's just absolutely amazing, great songwriting, the guy's got an incredible voice. So here's what I was going to tell you about that I was talking to you about earlier. Andrew Mears, the singer of Youth Movies, he was the original singer for Foals. So Foles was Yanis and I think Jack, the drummer. And then I don't know if the other guys were in it, but the dude from Youth Movies, he was the original singer before Yanis did vocals. And there's a two-track single, which I will try and find and send you. I think it's on YouTube. And it's absolutely wild. It's like Foles. It's proper like Matthew Twidley, early Foles with him singing. And it's killer. It's incredible. But anyway, for whatever reason, he left and Foles became the biggest rock band, you know, on the planet, which is great. And, you know, all power to him. But yeah, Youth Movies just kind of like went from being this proper like sort of art rock, like four piece. And then they just sort of became, they got like a trumpet player in and then they released an album called Good Nature, which I don't think is on Spotify, which is a shame because it's a really good album. And they just became this much more kind of widescreen, like prog rock band with loads of, again, one of these bands that just had loads of ideas floating around. But yeah, just one of those bands. I saw them in the Little Civic in Wolverhampton with my cousin when I was about 14, 15. We were the only people there and the other band playing. And I just, again, it was just like, you know, they were playing as if the room was full and they were playing as if they were playing at Wembley Arena or whatever, you know. They played with so much conviction and passion. And that's what got me into wanting to be in a band. Was watching bands play to no one, because, you know, I'm sure a lot of people attest to when you first start a band. In fact, you know, even when Bad Grammar were probably at the height of their sort of our like fame, if you will. I don't know what you call it. I wouldn't say we were famous, but, you know, popularity, I guess. Yeah. You know, we were still gambling with who was going to turn up to shows and stuff. You know, people knew who we were and liked what we did, but it was still like, who's going to turn up? And but you still got to play, because you still got to play like it's your last show.
You play
to
who's there. You don't play to who's not there. You play to who's there.
Exactly, and that's the point. And that's why bands like Youth Movies were so important to me, because they proved the lesson in just being absolutely, you know, amazing songwriters and incredible songs and putting a million ideas, but making it sound coherent and beautiful, wonderful. But then also doing stuff, but also just like not giving a shit about who wasn't there and just playing to the people that invested their time and energy into them. That's a proper band, you know. Yeah. And also, like, what's really interesting about the band is I hear parallels with them with this band called Black Country New Road, who are like the cool new band at the moment.
Yeah.
I really like them, actually. I kind of was on the fence for a while, but I think they're really good. And I was thinking, man, who do they sound like? And they sound like Youth Movies. And I was just like, this is amazing. Like, this is so cool. I don't know if, and they're quite a young band like Black Country are, so I don't know. But I kind of got this feeling like I wouldn't be surprised if they, you know, heard some stuff or were influenced by them, because I think that there was a group of people that definitely, you know, really absorbed that band and really loved them and obviously, you know, wanted to keep them alive, you know. And there's a few friends that I know that still try and push Youth Movies out, you know, still put links up to Spotify and still put videos and say, hey, do you remember how great this band were, you know?
Well, that's, I suppose, like we were saying, the beauty of earlier on, the beauty of being able to be in touch with everybody all of the time and everything, it's also you're able to share a lot of what you love with a lot of people as well and influence a lot of people or just get them interested in stuff too, which is another thing that I want to try and do with this. A lot of these bands who, if you're a young musician listening to it, if you listen to some of these bands that Ben has been talking about, they might influence you in a way that you never thought as well. Think of it like mm-hmm. your dad introducing you to Carlos Santana or Led Zeppelin for the first time and being like, this is, and your dad going, this is music, son. This is hopefully like in that sort of vein. I want to try and get that across as well, that these bands yeah. have influenced a hell of a lot of people and they may not even realize it either.
Like, no.
I bet if you sat and listened to a lot of your Bad Grammar stuff, you could accidentally find a riff in there that you've subconsciously lifted from a Led Zeppelin track that, you know, your dad or your uncle or your brother or whatever played you once in the car and it stuck with you. And then it like,
nah, I just plagiarized everything, man.
In that case, then you can go back and listen to all the Bad Grammar stuff and lift it. Just like listening to Houses of the Holy straight from the bat.
Yeah, that's quite funny you saying that. Like, in fact, like, you know, if I ever get round to the whole parenthood thing, like, what would I play my child?
Here, son, here's Champions by Blackfish.
I think I'd be like, nah, don't worry about it. Here's Rumours by Fleetwood Mac.
It's on everyone's t-shirt. It has to be a good record, right?
Just get some cocaine-fueled pop music down your mate. It's all good.
Britney Spears is classical music when we have kids. So yeah, you touched on, obviously, going back to picking your favourite show and your favourite song and everything, you touched on the Little Civic show when you were a wee lad.
Yeah.
So it's just quite an early age to be going to these type of shows. And I don't mean that in a bad way, because a lot of, like, I was quite late to the party, wholeheartedly admitted that. I wasn't going to shows like this till I was in my sort of very late teens, early 20s. But, you know, being dragged along to some quite obscure music at the age of 14, that's not a bad introduction to it.
No, all power to my cousin Ollie. Hi Ollie, if you're listening. He might be. He's an angel, and
we'll send him a signed copy of the podcast.
he's just like one of the most. I don't speak to him or see him loads. But whenever I do, he is just a very influential person on me. He always tells me what to check out and what I'd like. And whenever Bad Grammar used to play, he was living in Norwich for a bit, he'd always come and see the shows, and we'd get drunk together and have the best time. But I go around to his house a lot, and he would play me stuff. He played me Black and Sky by Biffy Clyro, which kind of started everything off. You know, I heard that record and I thought, right, so rock music is weird. That's awesome.
It can be weird.
But then he'd also play me, like, I'd go back and he'd play me like DJ Shadow and like loads of weird hip hop stuff, and I'd be like, this is amazing. You know, he really threw me into that alt world. He got me into like Explosions in the Sky, and just, you know, if it was good, it was good. It didn't need to be on trend or cool. It's just like, listen to what these musicians are doing.
Yeah, he didn't box it in. I was actually having a discussion with somebody earlier on today who is a wholehearted, they will only listen to funk and funky house. And I was trying to explain to him about how much I love the Mars Volta and why I love the Mars Volta, and how you have to embrace it. Like, you have to sit in a dark room with your headphones on and listen to D-Lass and the Cobra from start to finish. Like, it's not a it's not a jump in and out sort of thing. You can't, like, for example, if someone's never heard that, like, youth movies are probably the same thing. You can't just throw a track at them and go listen to that. It needs to have all the stuff that comes around with it. It needs to have an understanding that these guys are trying to do these, or these people are trying to do this here. You know, you've got to have
bodies
someone
of work. Yeah.
Yeah. You've got to have someone who's happy to go, this is this type of music, and this is why I think you would like it, because it sounds a little bit like this. It's got influence from here, and it's all sort of glued and gelled together in this weird, neat little package.
I completely agree with that, man. Yeah, I think that's exactly it. I mean, you know, I have found myself, like, listening to lots more kind of ambient and drone stuff. Like, I went to see Sun a few years ago. Have you ever checked out Sun before?
I've listened to some of their stuff, but have you got your hearing back since then?
Yeah.
That's
well,
been my overwhelming understanding of that act.
You've got to wear plugs and stuff, but it's like basically, like, someone described it to me, and this is perfect, and like having a bath, but the bath is noise, you know. It's like the water is fucking sludgy, massive guitars.
Nice.
Like fucking hundreds of hundreds of decibels of fucking and
music that you can feel almost quite literally.
It goes through your body, man. But, like, I remember I was nervous because I'd heard about people passing out at shows and stuff. And I bumped into and they have a restroom, apparently, where people can go and chill out for a
just
minute.
Like, have a chamomile tea and a sit down.
Dude, genuinely, someone had told me this was a thing. I was like, no way. So I was in the cab on the way there thinking, what the fuck have I got myself into? And then I got there and I was like, this is insane. But sorry, the point that I was trying to make is that you've got to absorb it. You've got to be in it and you've got to be involved in it. And my mate, I bumped into a friend of mine who had been seeing Sun for years. He'd seen them in like Satan's Hollow in the 90s, you know, which would have been incredible. And he said, like, you'll get something out of it. You've got to go with it. You've got to let it consume you. You've got to let it absorb you, and you've got to let it go through you. And I'll be honest, and this is going to sound hilarious, but I've not been the same since. Like, it was like a religious awakening. It was like, it was incredible because I've never experienced music like that before. I've never experienced anything like it in my life. I don't know if I ever will again. But that's the point, man. You've got to be all in. You've got to experience it, and you've got to take it by the horns and just let it breathe you in.
So I remember the first time I was introduced to Employed to Serve, they were playing... it was at ArcTangent, and my friend Ollie Miles of Samoans fame, popularity, whatever the word we used earlier on, was like, you've got to come and see this band. I'm not going to tell you anything about it. It's just heavy. And I was like, okay, fair. Dragged me along. We stood sort of towards the back and we watched the whole set. It was absolutely intense. And then when I left the tent, I turned to Ollie and I was like, I feel like I'm shell-shocked. Like, my whole body was sort of just like still rumbling from what had happened. And I was like, I don't think I'd had anything to drink, and I definitely wasn't on anything. And I was like, I want that high again. What was that? Like, that feeling that you get being at a show it wasn't just loud. It wasn't just because it was loud. It was just a full all body experience.
And intense,
50 mile an hour.
Yeah.
For 40 minutes, and you don't get a break.
Yeah, that's it, Matt. Yeah, that band are one of those bands. I absolutely love that band. That is just like, it is full throttle. In fact, I think that's similar year I went to see Frontieria for the first time.
Oh god, yeah, absolutely.
And that was an
insanity.
I know, that was like one of those experiences where, like, literally I looked at Abby, my partner, and she looked at me and I was like, what the fuck was that?
Yeah.
And she was like, I don't know, but it was fucking sick. And I was like, wasn't it? I want to watch it again.
I was chatting to Pedram I think October, November last year, so 2020, if anyone's listening to this well into the future, just saying something like, how do you do that? Like, how does that come together? Because for anyone who doesn't know Frontier, I know I'm sort of going on a bit of a tangent here, but they're based across the pond. Like, some of them live in Scotland and some of them live in America.
Right,
and they write this incredibly abrasive yet incredibly well put together sort of like gent mathcore. I'm probably doing it an incredible disservice here describing it like that, but
that's about right though. That's pretty spot on, I'd say, dude.
But yeah, they're one of those bands that you go in and see and you come out of it. So I remember we say jokingly, we listened to the record when Unloved came out, and we were saying, yeah, you do have to have a break halfway through, and not in a bad way. You're like, I've absorbed so much in 20 yeah. minutes now. I'm just gonna have a little sit down, look out the window for a bit, and then we'll go around again.
I used to call it the Frontieria Challenge. I used to give Unloved to people and see how far they could get into it. Some people did the whole record, and other people got like 2 minutes in.
Oh, I love it. It's like one of those you have to absorb it. You've got to be in the zone for it. You can't just put it on and listen to it in the car. Like,
no.
I feel like that's an incredibly, incredibly dangerous thing to do. Like, very irresponsible.
You don't sit down with a whiskey on a Friday night and just wearing your best tweed,
listening to Unloved by Frontier.
No, you got to be all in, man. You got to be hyped.
Yeah. Right, and on that amazing tangent again, I think I might do another podcast. Which, what music makes you feel terrible? And we'll just go from there. We were on to your fourth and final choice. Who have we got in fourth place?
In fourth place. Choice four was Grammatics. Grammatics were from Leeds, and they kind of introduced me to that whole north, like west scene. And kind of like, I remember seeing them on, I think it was called like something like the Yorkshire Triple Threat Tour or something like that. And it was like, and Rello Tomassi headlined, who I'd been aware of for a while.
Another
Grammatics played. Yeah, excellent band. And then Pulled Apart by Horses opened up. And this is when like Pulled Apart had just released like the first single, like I think Meat Balloon on like 7-inch. The album hadn't even come out there. And I went to see it and I was like, this is great. These guys are just nuts. Because at that point they were just like, Tom was just like a total force of nature.
Yeah, didn't give a shit, did they? They're just full on.
They were incredible. They were absolutely amazing. In fact, that show, Lynn's, Tom's partner, who he's in Magic Mountain with, she was playing guitar for James Brown. And then, because I think it was Paulie or something. And then years later, she played in Grammatic. She was their cellist player for a little bit as well, because she did like loads of session work as well. It was just weird. I was like, who is this amazing musician that I keep seeing in all these awesome bands, you know? But Grammatics kind of introduced me to the whole kind of lead scene, and they kind of sort of went, because they were one of those bands that I think could have been massive, but they kind of left it where it was. Like their last EP, which I put as my favorite release, is called Corrupt, because it was kind of like it was a stepping stone to something so much more inventive and imaginative and crazy. Like you didn't know where it was going to go. But like they were one of those bands that kind of like transcended scenes. So they were kind of proggy, they were riffy, they were poppy. They were dressed in like quite sort of twee, sort of like kind of hipstery, like indie gear in the like late noughties. They look cool. And they all had like nice haircuts and stuff. They got me into
people.
Yeah, they were, but like
unlike the rest of us.
Exactly, the scruffy buggers. But it was kind of like these two parallels. Like there was like one side of them that was quite like wonky poppy stuff that got me into bands like Dutch Uncles and everything, and that whole Manchester scene that I ended up being like not a part of, because Bad Grammar were nothing like those bands, but you know, we were still in the Manchester scene and I still was really involved in it, and you know, went to every show that I could when we were gigging. But then on the other hand, they had all these like amazing like riff rock stuff, like bands like Pulled Apart by Horses, Dinosaur Pileup, Turbo Wolf, you know, that were kind of all playing together. And particularly like the first two bands, they were Leeds bands. So, you know, we'd go to Leeds and go and see them play quite a bit.
Into a fantastic band that sort of pulled Apart by Horses and Dinosaur Pileup together, a band called Mother Vulpine, who another band that I would have thrown in. I think Lynn's played guitar that you were talking about from Grammatics.
Yeah,
there as well.
Like, man. Yeah. Was Matt from Dinosaur Pileup in the band?
Matt Bigland singing guitar. I think Tom Hudson playing bass and Lynn's playing guitar. I'm not sure. Apologies for not knowing who the drummer
That's
is.
That's amazing. Yeah. You told me that a while ago, and I remember thinking that was crazy.
There's
like
a
what
a fantastic song called "Hammer Cracks the Bell." That I remember the first time I saw them, they were touring with Eagles of Death Metal of all bands.
That's cool.
I think I was 15 or 16, so I'd gone to see Eagles of Death Metal and then seen this band, and then realized 4 or 5 years later, two of my favorite bands then were Dinosaur Pileup and Pulled Apart by Horses. So it was almost like by seeing this band, it sort of all comes full circle.
That's really cool, sorry for interrupting,
man. You know, obviously.
No, don't interrupt. I love hearing this sort of thing. You're not at all. But that was what was so cool about it, isn't it? Like this whole scene, like just tied everyone together. Like another band from Leeds that I was just thinking about, Skylarkin, their drummer, Nestor, he's in Menace Beach and he's now in Magic Mountain and stuff. It all just, you know, there's this wonderful like little, you know, incestuous little scene of bands that all like hang out and be in bands together and stuff. And that's what made me realise that Leeds is like, you know, there's something in the water up there.
Oh, God, yeah. There's so many great musicians up there.
It's still going as well. You know, I mean, Chicken Hawk or Hawkeyes, they were another Leeds band that I remember seeing around that time and thinking, what the hell is this? But then there was just so many, like, just branches off into other things. But Grammatics, for me, pulled it all together because they were proggy, poppy, riffy, everything. And they didn't realise, I don't think, how great they were. Their last shows they did were like with Block Party. I think they could have been like a really force to be reckoned with. They could have done like really big. The Block Party did like a month-long tour. It's called Blocktober. I never went to it, but I think it was when the third record came out, and they were main support for the whole month. And then after that, they kind of just like released an EP on like a pledge thing, you know, oh, if you want a copy, pledge for it and we'll send you one. And then that was it. See you later. And like, I think Owen, he started loads. He's been in a bunch of bands since then, which are really good. Grammatics just for me just felt like one of those bands that just almost didn't know how great they were, you know, and had the potential to be something so much bigger. And unfortunately, just stuff gets in the way of that, doesn't it? You know, that's the problem with that whole kind of underground scene, you know. And the reason I mention these bands is because unfortunately, it just sort of fizzled out for them, you know, in the end, and it's a shame, but you know, it's the way it goes, isn't it?
It's really nice though when a band does split up. Obviously, it sucks because there can be part of people's lives, you know, going to shows week in, week out for them. But the members of the bands, the ones who go on to do stuff after that, you still remember, like you've mentioned a bunch of them there. They still go on to do other stuff, and you can always thankfully hear those little influences from their past sort of musical ventures in their new stuff as well. So nothing ever really sort of disappears. I mean, going back quickly back to Blackfish, like Sam Manville has been releasing stuff basically on solidly for the past 2 years now acoustically. You know, and you can just, people, I suppose people just sort of go in a slightly different direction, don't they? Don't always, but it gives people that little bit extra to them as a musician or as a person that you might not have experienced with them and five other people surrounding them, you know, going 110 mile an hour every night.
I fully agree. I mean, you know, not to put this back on myself, but you know, look at the band I was in before I was in this project. You know, it was Full Throttle rock band, and now it's a sad lad with an acoustic guitar. You know, it's a million miles away, but it's just, as you say, it's showing a different side to you and showing that you are, you know, a multi-dimensional person. You know, I like acoustic mellow stuff as much as I like crushingly heavy metal, you know, like, and you know, I still try to, when I was doing Peaks, you know, I was in GUG with Tom and Dan, and that was like a proper full-on like riffy silly rock band, but I was still, you know, I was doing shows with them, you know, just kind of running around in my own sweat wearing my pants and then the next day I'd be, you know, fully dressed wearing a coat and a hat on stage crying down a microphone, you know. It's just, you know, it's just,
that's why we love you, Ben, because you're a man of many, many talents.
I wouldn't say talents, but bless you.
I'll give yourself some credit.
but you know, that's it, isn't it? It's showing different sides to you. And that was what's like so great about these bands, you know, like Grammatics. They were just so multi-dimensional. They had so much else going on within their sound. And you could hear all these wonderful little nuggets, you know, that was floating around their sound. And that was really exciting to me to hear bands that were put, because you know, I don't want to be like one trick pony. I don't want to just write rock songs. I want them to have depth. I want them to have hooks. I want them to be funky, be groovy, be heavy, be punky. I want it to have everything. You know, it needs to, for me at least, it needs to encompass everything. And I think particularly the bands that I chose, you know, are all bands that I think just did their own thing and are so distinctive and so original. And that's and that was why they're so influential on me, because they taught me to just be myself, basically.
Well, thank you very much for obviously going through all those. We spoke about, I mean, I would say more than four acts there. We've probably gone through about 400 different bands, haven't we? Which is fantastic, which is the whole point of this. Like, we're pointing out how these acts didn't just influence ourselves, but influenced everyone else in the scene as well. But I just want to move on to the last part here, which lots of music venues have unfortunately closed down over the past decade or more due to a plethora of different things. Now, obviously, I don't want to bring up the pandemic as why music venues have been having to be closed down, I think, because that's sort of almost out of our hands sort of thing. But what I want to do bring back is how important small local music venues are to the community and to the bands and stuff. And I'd like you, if you could just chat, if you could pick a music venue for me that meant something to you, that, you know, you could sort of go into a bit of detail about whether you went to shows there, whether you played shows there. And, you know, sort of highlight what it means to you. Obviously these things can sort of span across the board. Usually these things are all the same. This music venue means a hell of a lot to XYZ bands because it gives us a starting point. But yeah, which venue would you like to discuss?
Yeah, sure, man. The Roadhouse in Manchester was such an important venue to me in many different ways, as a punter and as a performer. And it was a place where I met a lot of friends, a lot of people in bands. Me and Luce in Bad Grammar, we played there a lot in our early days. It was our first kind of taste of playing some big shows with some big bands that were coming through town. I don't actually fully know why it closed down. I think it was just sort of general lack of kind of funds and stuff. And I think maybe the council wanted to turn it into something else, but I think actually it hasn't really done anything. It's just stayed the same. And it's very sad actually when you walk past it, because yeah, it was such a, I know it's just like a proper music venue, you know. It was a bit grimy. It was a bit smelly. You could smell the toilets were the other side of the venue, but you could still smell piss from when you walked in the door, you know.
Just how we like it.
Exactly, man. You know, it was grimy, but it was, I guess, like, you know, like people say, it was a shithole, but it was our shithole, you know. Yeah. But it was a cool venue. The sound was incredible. That was the thing. It was like a bit like dingy, but the sound was unbelievable. They had these huge bass bins at the front of the stage, sounded incredible. The guy that did the sound there, he was incredible. He was so good at doing what he did. And we did some really amazing, exciting shows there that I will always hold on to. But when I was, before I was in a band that was playing like shows like that, I was going to that venue, you know, as a punter, and I'd make the trip from Warrington to Manchester and go to the Roadhouse. It was, I think, one of the first venues I went to when I first moved to Warrington. That was, I bought tickets. I think it might have been to see, see a band called, I was a Cub Scout, and Rolo Tomassi was supporting, and a band called Data Select Party, who are another great kind of twiddly band from that era that we were just discussing. Anyway, that was the first time I went to that venue, and I just thought, this is amazing. This is great. This is such a fun, cool little place. And then Bad Grammar just ended up doing loads of shows there, and there was always club nights afterwards, and we'd go and have a boogie and stuff. And, you know, you'd meet people later down the line that spent all their time there, and you'd go, oh my God, yeah, I remember that night. And do you remember when this happened? And it just seemed like a catalyst for like it was just one of those venues where like really good, cool bands played, and it would kind of step up to the bigger venues around the city, you know. And it was, yeah, it's really, really sorely missed. It was a huge, I think, gravitational pull towards that scene in Manchester. And yeah, we miss it very, very dearly.
So yeah, if obviously when everything starts opening back up, or even right now, if any of your local venues are doing anything, if they're doing a raffle for, you know, to help them raise money, if they're doing a fundraiser, if they're doing a Kickstarter, if they're selling merchandise, please purchase it if you can. These venues need us. And without us, you know, going to shows, the band, your next favorite band, might not exist. And we really want to champion them and say thank you to everyone who's working really hard behind the scenes, obviously at the Music Venues Trust or Young People's Network, anything like that. Big shout out to all of those. And sort of, yeah, on that note, Ben, thank you so much for joining me on this. It's been a wild ride and I've loved every single second of it.
Me too, brother. It really has been so nice to catch up and chat with you. And it really means a lot that you dropped me a message and invited me on. So thank you very much, brother. Best of luck with all of this. I hope it goes well for you, because it's a cracking little concept. And I think, yeah, it's really nice to reminisce.
Thank you, man. I'll see you at the Podcast Awards.
Yeah, baby.
Ben, thank you very much, Ben, and I hope you all enjoyed the episode.